Last week we spent a lot of time talking about the concept of free will in the light of Pharaoh and his hard heart. The setup there is, if Pharaoh has free will, then he's responsible, but if God is the one that hardens him, then he's not. And pretty much all the rabbis say that Pharaoh did in fact have free will, and I agree with them. And we talked about it in the context of Christianity and Calvinism. And we said Calvinism is of the opinion that you cannot exercise free will contrary to your nature. Whatever your nature is, you're going to behave that way. And of course, the essence of Calvinism is that by nature you are a sinner. And since you are by nature a sinner, you are unable to choose God. Very clear statement of what Calvinists believe. Jews don't believe that, and nor do I, by the way. We talked about Rabbi Sacks, and the whole idea of Judaism is God gives you tools to change your nature. Calvinism's idea is you're born a sinner, you're a sinner all your life, and that's all you are, and that's all you're ever going to be, so you can't choose God. Judaism believes that God gives you tools to change your nature so that you can become somebody different than what you were born and somebody more pleasing to God. And as I say, I agree with that. And the things that he gives you are, for example, the Torah, which is his teaching and instruction, that you can read it and you can find out how God would have you behave. And Rabbi Sacks closed his article with a little statement that I kind of like, and he says, freedom is a muscle that needs to be exercised. Use it or lose it. I agree with that. So today's Torah portion, what God is doing is setting Israel up to develop free will. Remember, they started off as slaves, and one of the sort of things about a slave is you're limited in your choices. That sort of goes with the territory when you're a slave. So what God is doing is he is setting Israel up to become free. And in order to become free, they have to learn how to do that. And it starts, of course, with free will, which they have to develop. They haven't had a chance to use that for 400 years. And it will then develop into a free nation. Now, we talked last time about what you need to have to exercise free will. First off, you need to know who you are. And because of who I am, there are things that I can and cannot do, or will and will not do, and that flows from a sense of my personal identity. And again, one of the things that Judaism believes, and I agree with, is you spend your lifetime developing who you are, your personal identity. When you're born into the world, you start off given a basic thing. I'm the son of Bill and Peg Behrens. Member of a family. I was born in the United States. Oh, okay, I've got a country, etc. And as I go through my life, I am able to say, oh, I'm a child of God. Oh, God tells me things and expects things of me. I can learn these things over a lifetime. And in that process, I develop who I am. So when I make decisions, as I'm looking at something, and the little example I used last time was bacon. I don't eat bacon anymore. Love bacon before I became messianic. I'd go to a buffet and I'd load up on the bacon. Perfect combination of fat and salt. Wonderful stuff. It's no longer a temptation because who I am is someone who doesn't do that. I don't have to resist it. It just isn't there anymore. And I have changed who I am in that respect and lots of other respects. So when I'm tempted to do something like get a tray full of bacon on a buffet, does this thing match my self-image? And the answer to that's no, it doesn't anymore. Used to, doesn't now. And then finally, as I'm making decisions, does God give me any instructions about this? So if, for example, I were to look with a lustful eye on somebody else's wife, does God have anything to say about that? Well, yeah, he does. He says, don't do that. And furthermore, Christ says, don't even think about it. So who I am has changed over the years, and that's the decision process most of us go through as we're trying to decide what to do in any given situation. And the beginning of freedom is you get to make your decisions. Somebody else doesn't get to make them for you. Because remember, we're starting off with a nation full of slaves. And a whole bunch of their decisions are not their own. It's a metaphor as well as being something physical. Because we start off with other people making our decisions for us. And you can go out and you can look at our culture, and you can look at all the things that cause people to make decisions which they don't really think about. What our society does is tries to feed you pre-made decisions so that you'll go along and do the things that the group wants. It's the way humans are. So your process then is to develop the ability to discern and develop your own free will, use that muscle, if you will, so that you're able to make your decisions in light of who you are, what does God say about it, and do the foreseeable results of this match something I would like? That's the essence of free will. So, what God is doing now in Passover is he is setting up Israel, A, to develop free will as individuals, but B, to change from being slaves to being free. And we'll get to Sinai 2 weeks from now, and we'll talk about that then. But what the Ten Commandments at Sinai are is God's codification of, this is the thing I have purchased, Israel. God purchased Israel at the expense of Egypt's firstborn, bought and paid for. So when we get to Sinai, this is the codification of what I've purchased. I'll give you another example. Our founding documents are the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. Well, the Declaration is a statement of principles, who we are. The Constitution is the implementing legislation that says the people who are this way, these are their laws. Two different things. One is concept and the other is implementation. Now, one of the things that God says at the beginning of the Exodus, and I will read it to you because it's kind of important. Exodus 4:21. And the Lord said to Moses, when you go back to Egypt, see that you do before Pharaoh all the miracles that I've put in your power. But I will harden his heart so that he will not let the people go. Then you shall say to Pharaoh, thus says the Lord, Israel is my firstborn son. And I say to you, let my son go that he may serve me. If you refuse to let him go, I will kill your firstborn. That's back in Exodus 4, before this whole thing started. So the thing that you need to understand from that is Israel has been adopted by God as his firstborn. Now that has ramifications for us, because when Yeshua was sacrificed and rose from the dead, what he did is he gave us the ability to become sons of God and daughters. So the whole point here of Israel being the firstborn, of course, the concept of firstborn implies that there's going to be lots more. One only makes sense if there's going to be two. So the idea here is Israel is the firstborn, and the job of the firstborn is to serve as a bridge between the parents and the rest of the children. That's Israel's job. They're supposed to serve as a bridge between God, the Father, and the rest of the nations, the children who are going to come along later, which is most of us. So the first thing that God then does in establishing Israel's identity is he adopts them into his family. Remember I said in order to exercise free will, you got to know who you are. And so what God is saying is, Israel, you are my firstborn. That's now part of your identity. That's who you are. And that's the first step in developing free will, if you will, among the Israelites. And it's the first step in Israel learning how to be free. Notice how I said that. Learning how to be free. Because you have to learn how to be free. If you just get turned loose, what you wind up doing is most people wind up eating too much bacon. You know, you just go berserk at the buffet because you don't know who you are. So God is starting a process here. He's teaching Israel who they are. You're part of my family. You're my firstborn. And then what God does to the nations as Christ is raised from the dead, he says, now you are sons and daughters of the Most High. Yeshua is the firstborn of all creation. You then have the ability to become brothers and sisters. What he's doing is giving you an identity. And the identity is different than the identity that you were perhaps born with. That's the point of the exercise. Now, one of the things that you should have noticed, because Luke said it about 36 times, is teach your children. Remember, we have all of those things where when your children ask you what this is all about, say this. This is what God did for me when he took me out of Egypt. And you have teach your children, as you say, about 36 times between the death of the firstborn and eating matzah in the wilderness. The key there is what you're doing is you are telling your children part of who they are. Your children are members of Israel. They are members of God's firstborn. And in order for that to be true, you have got to teach them every generation. That's why we go through Passover every year. That's why we go through the feasts every year. That's why we take our children through the Passover and through the feast every year. Because what we're doing is we are reinforcing that this is who you are. Because if you don't know who you are, you really can't exercise free will. So the education of children is a key part of developing who they are. And what God does at the end of the Exodus passage that Luke read is he says over and over and over again, when your children ask you what this is all about, this is what you're going to say. God doesn't leave it to chance. He says, this is what you're going to say. This is how you do it. And that's the whole point of developing a concept of who you are. Now, in order to be human, you have to know who you are. And who you are, as I've said, is a function of who your parents are and where your parents came from. So as I said at the beginning, I am the son of William Barons and Margaret Barons. I was born in the United States, which means I'm an American. Didn't have any choice in any of that, by the way. We talked about that last time. But the point is, I have relationship to people that gets plugged in when I'm born. And that's how it starts. I have a relation to people. I also have a relationship to a place. I also have a relationship to a nation. That's all part of who we are. And what God is setting up for Israel is all of those relationships. And that's the whole point of the end of the Exodus. So, liberty requires context. Because if you don't have context and you don't know who you are, when faced with a tray of bacon, you'll just go berserk and eat all the bacon. And one of the things that Rabbi Sacks said, and I will quote the end of it, what they, the rabbis, meant, was that if the law is engraved on the hearts of the people, it does not need to be enforced by police. True freedom, chirut, is the ability to control oneself without having to be controlled by others. Without accepting voluntarily a code of moral and ethical restraints, liberty becomes license, and society itself a battleground of warring instincts and desires. Does that sound familiar to anybody? So the United States was conceived in liberty. That liberty for us has become license, which is to say anything goes. That's not liberty. That's the slippery slope back to slavery. Because what you have become is you have become slaves to a group. You have become slaves to nothing higher than appetite. And in that sense, you have not developed fully as a human being. And what God is doing is he's starting the process here of Israel becoming fully human. fully his children, fully the firstborn. And I will close with a quote from a great American, Robert E. Lee. "A nation which does not remember what it was yesterday does not know where it is today." By the way, many of you know I graduated from West Point. He was number one in his class when he graduated. He was first captain of the cadets. He was superintendent of West Point, and they have just taken his statue out of the place. Another quote from Robert E. Lee. "A land without memories is a people without liberty." So what's going on right now in this process of canceling our history is explicitly designed to steal your liberty. This is not something random. This is not an accident. This is satanic. And what it's designed to do is cut you off from your roots. And one of the nice things about the Bible is you read about the Hebrew people, and boy, you see them, warts and all. You see the good ones, and you see the really rotten ones. And that's all in the history, because that's who that people is. Our history is the same way. We got lots of warts in our history, but we got lots of good stuff. And what's happening is people are going through right now and selectively canceling what they believe are the warts. They believe are the warts. And what they're doing is they are separating us from our history. And once we have no history, we become a people without liberty. That's the next step. So, as you read the scripture, recognize that you are a child of the Most High God. You have been adopted. You weren't born into that. You were adopted when you made a decision to follow Christ. Learn, and you all are because you're sitting in here and you're listening to the scriptures and all that, but learn what this family is about, what its history is, and what its customs and regulations are. Because as you live in this family and you follow those, you will develop liberty and you will develop your own free will. You will become someone who does not get blown by the latest fad that's going through the culture. That's the whole purpose of free will, and that's the whole purpose of liberty.